Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your hosts, Jim Person and Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome, Knife Junkie, to episode 156 of the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Jim, the Knife Newbie Person.
And I'm Bob DeMarco. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. It is the place for knife newbies and knife junkies to learn all about knives and knife collecting, knife making, anything about knives. The Sunday weekend interview show is when Bob gets to dive deep and talk to the knife designers, the knife makers, the knife reviewers, anybody who loves knives involved in the knife game. That's what we're about here on the Sunday weekend show. And Bob, another great interview waiting in the wings.
I'm speaking with Lance Abernathy of Sniper Bladeworks. Sniper Bladeworks, the acclaimed custom knife makers that came out in 2009. They have a new reload. It's called the 2020 Reload. They're kind of reintroducing their brand with a strong push, and they've got five new awesome knives, and I can't wait to talk to Lance about them.
Well, we will get to that interview in just a second, but I do want to remind you that if you like the Knife Junkies podcast, we provide the Sunday episode, the interview show, the Wednesday midweek supplemental, where Bob gets to dive deep and talk about his knives coming in and some going out.
But
we also talk about knife life news and all that kind of good stuff. And then, of course, Thursday, it's the video show, the live video show on YouTube, Thursday Night Knives at 10 p.m. on Thursday. So three chances to join the Knife Junkie every single week to hear what's going on in the knife world. So let's get to that interview.
Have a knife you want featured or reviewed? Call the Knife Junkies 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487 and let us know.
Hey, Lance, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. It's also been a pleasure seeing your knives and your designs resurfacing with such bravado recently with your reload, your 2020 reload. And I want to get to that in a minute. But everyone, most people who are listening to this or watching this are familiar with your work, your design and custom knives under the Sniper Bladeworks shingle. And I got to ask you, you know, knowing just a very little bit about you, I know that being a sniper is in your past. How did a gun guy get into making knives?
I've been a knife guy forever, you know, since I was a little kid. We collected knives. We'd go to the Knife Makers Guild show. It was in Kansas City. So we would go to that. One of our neighbors, who's a really cool guy, he was a cop, and he made knives. And he made some stuff for us and would teach us some things. And I still talk knives with him to this day when I see him now and again. He was a really cool guy. Both his kids are badasses. They worked, they were cops and work for the federal government now or did. So real neat family. That was kind of an influence, I think. I was friends with Al Marr as a little kid, too.
What?
Yeah. Al Marr was completely awesome. Really good to me. All the way up into being an adult. I wish he could kind of see what we were doing now. I think that'd be neat. And I have some questions for him.
Wait, I have to interrupt you. Al Marr, how did you meet and get to know Al Marr, become friends?
So they had an Al Marr knife on the cover of a gun magazine, and you could win it. And my dad just fell in love with this. So, you know, he put in a couple of entries, but he's like, yeah, this ain't going to work. So he just called up Al Marr and said, I want this knife. Can you make me one? And it had some engraving on it. It had been dolled up a bit. And he wanted our initial put in there. So they had an A put in there, engraved in it. And it turned out really, really nice. Mm-hmm. And he and Al kind of became buddies. And my dad bought a lot of knives over the years, or a handful anyways, for customers and stuff as gifts. And through that, we became friends with him. So when we went and met him, he'd come to the guild show one year. And we were friendly with him. And he was like, you know, if you're ever out in the Portland area, swing by. And I'm not sure if he really thought we'd go up. But we were on vacation out west one year. And not quite that far west. But my dad was like, we should go see your Uncle Bob. And my mom was like, that is so nice, Gary. Like, you've never been that interested in Uncle Bob. And we're at Uncle Bob's for about 20 minutes before he's on the phone with Al. I'm like, hey, we're coming over. So
that's awesome.
So we go over, spend the afternoon with Al Marr, his daughter, my brother, and the daughter. I think it's Rayanne. They played out in the backyard. I got a knife fighting lesson from Al Marr, kendo lesson. Talked about scrimshaw and fighting chickens and all kinds of crazy stuff. It was really neat. He could not have been nicer. I think the final thing that really sealed the deal was we were about ready to leave. And like a lot of kids, you may have like your neighborhood gang or club. Well, being a good right winger, I had organized everyone in our neighborhood into like a little right wing militia. We were the 7th Army Commandos, but I had a business card. My dad had his business cards printed up for some reason. So I gave Al Marr this business card and he just lost it. He was like, this is excellent. This is what the youth of America needs. And then he went back, broke out his scrapbook. I mean, because I don't think I realized he was a Green Beret until then. We went through the whole scrapbook. I got my first copy of Soldier of Fortune. Mm. I subscribed to Soldier of Fortune as like an 11-year-old or something. My mom was not real thrilled.
Yeah.
She was afraid I was going to go become a mercenary or something. But yeah, Al was really good to us. And, you know, I was already kind of a knife person anyways. And just, you know, after that, the die was cast.
So did your friendship result in getting a lot of tips and tricks and that kind of thing? Or was this before you actually started making knives yourself?
No, I mean, because this started when I was literally maybe 11 or 12.
Okay. All right. So.
And then, you know, I think he died in the early 90s. So I would have just been in my 20s, early 20s. And so I wasn't doing too much knife stuff at the time. But, we would correspond now and again. And he just always was super friendly.
Okay. So we were tracing your history from your youth. We got to Al Marr and I sidetracked you. So tell me how you got to here. Or at least to the start of your custom knife making career from there.
Just enjoying knives and doing knife stuff. I had designed a few things in the early 90s, and the Mineral Mountain Hatchet Works guys made it for us down in Arkansas. And then somewhere in the early 2000s, Dad was starting to collect some higher end folders, and he and I were talking about that a bit. And he had set up a knife for me to have made through Don Hansen.
Okay.
So we did a real neat real high-end tactical folder that won the Chicago show there in Arlington Heights. I think that was like an Ed Wormser show or something. That was a really neat show, by the way. And then through that, I met Jody. And Jody and I started doing some stuff together. And we made a knife, and I think that won the following year in the tactical folder.
Jody?
Muller. Jody Muller from Muller Forge.
Okay.
And those are all Missouri guys as well, along with Birch. I met Birch in there somewhere.
Okay.
But so then Jody and I became real good friends, and he was helping me design stuff and make some stuff. And about then I don't know, 05, 06, 07, somewhere in there. I was thinking about getting out of law enforcement. So he started showing me how to make some knives and a little bit more about the knife business and helping me with that. And then in 09, I started Sniper Blade Works and I quit and went full time.
Okay. So you were in law enforcement, SWAT. What, you were a sniper? What was your role? How did law enforcement fit into your knife world?
Well, I always wanted to be a cop and, so eventually that happened for me. I did a few other jobs right out of college, but I did almost 13 years for one of our local sheriff's departments here in the Kansas City area. And there I was a detective the bulk of the time. But I also got to be on the SWAT team. I was a sniper and a team leader. I was loaned out to a DEA task force for a while. That was kind of interesting.
Oh, wow. What kind of stuff is that? Drug interdiction kind of stuff?
Exactly. They have other things, but I was on an interdiction task force and they used to run out of the airport some, but after 9/11, the security got so tight that they didn't do quite as much of that. So we would do more, like interdiction out on the road. You could adopt cases from other agencies and then, you know, try to work them from there.
So to the uninitiated, such as myself, those who didn't serve in. And thank you for serving your community and your, I mean, it's, I work around police officers and sheriff's office folk, and to a man and woman, they've all been excellent people in my location. To those who aren't involved in that kind of tactical life, we might have wild notions about how knives fit into your operating. And of course, there's that the movie scenario of coming, you're a sniper, you got to get to that spot, so you come up behind someone with your knife and all that. And I'm pretty sure that's a very, very rare kind of thing. So what are you actually using your knives for on the kind of sniping on the kind of jobs you're talking about? And how did that inform the designs in the newly hatched Sniper Blade Works in 2009?
Yeah, I mean, most of the people I know have never had to stab anyone. Even we are friendly with some military guys. They're pretty high speed and all. You know, all of them have been in combat. I was chatting with them once, and they're like, "Yeah, I've had to shoot people." I'm like, "Have you ever had to stab anyone?" And all of them were like, "No." You know, if you end up having to stab someone, things have gone horrifically pear shaped at that point, generally. So you want to design it first and foremost as a tool, where it's comfortable, where it's useful. And then if you need to use it in a self-defense situation, hopefully it has some attributes that lend itself well to that. But to start with, you want to make sure you got a functional tool on you that you can use and works for you. So, I'm trying to think. Things that are smaller, I've started making some things a bit smaller. When I first started, like on SWAT, I carried some Rambo crap. I'm on the entry team. I mean, it was totally overkill, but it was awesome. I had a Dwayne Carrillo Aircat. If you get a chance to look his
green curve,
some of them, they're just the guy. I think the guy was a machinist. Like the fixed blade I had literal chainsaw teeth machined into it. It's ridiculous. It was an awesome looking knife. And the sheath was cooler than the knife, and the knife was badass. But, some stuff like that. And then as I got on and got a little older and maybe a little smarter, didn't want to have so much weight on me, I started to carry some things that were smaller. Especially if you're going to be on the entry team, I'm not going to be hacking down any brush generally. but I might need to pry open a door, pin a door shut. So, you'll use them for that. When you're taking cars apart, like over at the DEA, or just roadside interdiction, a knife is good when you're popping door panels and dashes and stuff. So things that are stout, I think, are important. You want them really to be useful as a tool.
So so I'm thinking primarily now of the LPC, which stands for Lance Personal Carry. And to me, that is your most, that's the knife I remember you for. That's your most emblematic knife to me. And then I saw the five models that came out. I wasn't too familiar with some of your other work from the earlier days. And, so I saw some of the knives, all of the knives that had come out in the 2020 reload, and they're all really, really cool. I can't believe you made a smash it, and I'm so excited about that.
I'm glad somebody's digging on me.
But one design detail that is very much you and your design is that sort of pistol grip. And I like it. It always reminds me a bit of Southeast Asian blades, that have that odd angle at the handle. And it presents the point in such a way that you don't have to torque your wrist if you're pushing it,
Yeah.
So I was curious when I see that, is that the result of your being so, of the gun being such a tool of your trade for so long that you designed it like that? Or is that more for that thrusting aspect? Tell me about your pistol grip ergonomics.
I think I like that shape. I like the feel of it. I agree with you. I think it gets the blade going downrange, without having to cant your wrist over. I think it's good for choppy motions, and I've gotten feedback on that as well. So I think we're on. I may have done that intuitively, but I've actually gotten some specific feedback that they like it. Mm-hmm. The martial arts guys and guys that like to cut on stuff, snap cuts and whatnot. And it may have come some from just pistol grip type things, but I find it very comfortable. I think it's useful. I also think sometimes it kind of gets your knuckles out of the way from what you're chopping. And you know, that's kind of how or why I liked it. And then really, I took a handful of knives before I started that I liked. You know, I noticed that I like some handles better than others. Mm-hmm. And I just went through the whole batch and really just tried to specifically pick out, why do I like this one better than that one? And I went through the whole thing and just kept reworking it and reworking it. You know, I got Jody to help me on some of that as well. And then after I had done that, you know, I just kind of looked at, you know, how's my hand built, right? What would make this feel better? What would take this to the next level? And that's kind of how we came up with that hump on the back that takes up that little gap. Mm-hmm. You've got kind of a, where am I going there on the camera? Kind of saber grip type of thing. Yeah. And that's really, you know, how we came up with a handle. And I, you know, I liked it. I mean, it looks a little different, but I like the way, I mean, I find it visually appealing. I know everybody does. And I believe early on someone referred to it as fugly.
It's a little strong.
Just not for me.
Not for me. You'll do next time. Yeah. Thank you.
I was very happy with how it turned out. I think it continues to feel comfortable. You know, over the years, we may tweak it a little bit here or there, but it's kind of, I feel like it stood the test of time for us anyways. Yeah. You know, and I still have knives that have straight handles that I like. You know, I don't think it's the way. I just think it's a way, but it's a way that works for us and we like, and that's kind of our niche. Plus it gives it a distinct style.
Yes.
I think the best woman I ever got in this was from Les Robertson, who's the dealer, and he writes for some magazines.
No, okay.
And this was early on, but I was on the phone with him. I was driving. I kind of remember where I was. I thought this was kind of a big deal because I was just getting into it. And I like Les. He's a really smart cat. Every time I talk to him, I feel like I learned something about knives or the knife business. But he said, you know, you have a real distinct style. He's like, I could hold your knife up and from across the room, you can tell that's a Sniper Bladeworks knife. And he's like, that's good. He's like, there's a lot of really good makers that never have a real distinct style. Hmm. And, he's like, you're onto something there. That's good. He's like, keep doing it. Hmm. So that one was pretty cool. I liked it.
Yeah. And it definitely does. I mean, you look across these five models, you have the Dashi, the Mamu, the LPC, the DMF, and the Smatchet. They all share the same DNA. I mean, you can tell just by looking at them. Where they differ the most is in the blade profile, in the grinds and such. I mean, just from a cursory glance. But they all present the blade in a similar fashion in that handle. You know, you were talking before about wanting these knives to be stout tools. Primarily, you know, and of course, any stout tool you can use as a weapon, you can use a wrench as a weapon if you have to. So, but you're saying a useful cutting tool. But also you started talking about prime. What about tomahawks? Have you ever thought about making tomahawks?
I've got a hawk drawn up and I've talked to, Ryan, RMJ.
Oh, yeah.
Martin. He's a good cat. You know, he's like a professor. He teaches college in metallurgy or.
Oh, cool.
Smithing. He's been on the History Channel for some stuff, for some tomahawk stuff. He's a great dude. I talked with him a little bit about a hawk back in the day, and you know, he said he would give us a few pointers. So yeah, we may come out with something. I've got something drawn up that I kind of like. It seems like every year or in years past or for shows, and in this, if we continue to release knives in batches, I'd like to have one big knife in there, be it in the future, like a Bowie or a Kukri or a Hatchet. You know, the Smatchet was the big one for this. You know, a few years back, we did that Chopper, which is kind of a go-locky thing.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so you said this. Let's talk about this. The 2020 Reload. So tell me how this came about and where this came out of. You were on hiatus for a while. So let's talk about the 2020 Reload. Tell me how it came about.
Well, I wasn't, you know, Dad died at about 14, right before the Blade Show. And, you know, I was kind of a train wreck on that for a couple of years. We had done so much knife stuff together that it just wasn't quite as much fun. And our team had changed some, you know, people get married, get different jobs, have kids. I wasn't getting quite as much help, and it wasn't that much fun, you know, so I kind of took a break. I also had started working, so I was working full time, and, you know, I'm making a few things here and there, but not really doing a lot. And Adam Pinner, who went to high school with my brother, is a real interesting cat, and we're all friends. And they had been talking about trying to help me for a few years, actually quite a few, but the timing just didn't quite work out. Well, a little over a year ago, he called me up and said, "Hey, I think I've got the time. I got a little bit of money. I've got some ideas on how to help you out. Do you still want to do it?" And I was like, "Yeah, hell yeah. Let's make some knives, especially if I can get some help, right? Where I don't have to do all this stuff on my own. Because, you know, social media, I suck at. I don't dislike it. I like talking to people, but trying to figure out how all this crap works is
not. Yeah, I get it.
You know, trying to build everything, especially there at the end by myself, was difficult. I shouldn't say by myself. I still had some help, but it was, you know, I wanted to do it in a more organized and professional structure. And he's like, "I can help you do that. You know, I can get you to a place where hopefully you're just doing the stuff you really want to do, and we'll get you some help on the other things." So we went back and forth on that a bit. And, you know, each time I talked to him, he got more excited about the project. I put him in touch with Mikey from V Knives. And, you know, and Mike and I have talked about doing something. Yeah. We've talked about doing something for a handful of years, but we just never had the time or the money or the energy. I was always either just busy trying to put out customs and then trying to put out customs and work. And, but I'm like, "Mikey, I think this is actually going to happen this time. Will you talk to my buddy Adam?" And he's, you know, Mikey's great. He's like, "Yeah, absolutely." So I put him on the phone, Mikey and Adam together. And it was right about the time of Blade Show West. So they went and met at Blade Show West, because Adam is from Kansas City, which is where we are, Missouri, specifically.
Okay.
Yeah. Not Kansas.
Right, right.
A little dig at our Kansas buddies. So he lives in Portland now, right? So Mikey's just up the road in Seattle. So they linked up and hit it off real well. And it just each time, you know, we put people together, the project just kept rolling. And, you know, Adam finally called me back and said, "Yep, we're doing this. Start picking the knives you want to use." And that's kind of how it came about.
Well, that's, I mean, in a way, I know you didn't intend it this way, and I'm sorry for the loss of your father. But in a way, that time away from being super active in the knife scene, built up demand because people love your designs. You've also licensed a few to Boker, and I'm not sure if anyone else, but you know, your designs are out there, and people love them, especially through the social media world and the secondary market world. And to find a Sniper Blade Works come up was like, you know, finding a golden ticket. So I think that your return, you know, with the 2020 reload is kind of a great timing. You know, if you waited 10 more years, people may have forgotten or something, but at this point, you know, the demand is there, and now here you are. And so each one of these five models, the Dashi, the Mamu, the LPC, the DMF, and the Smatchet, you're making 555 pieces of each, correct?
Yeah, that's the goal.
Okay.
We were trying to keep them, you know, somewhat, you know, a nice number, but not mass produce them. And I think we want to do that with everything in the future. Is I want it to be a little bit of kind of a boutique thing, right? I don't, you know, we're not trying to be Gerber. You know, we want them to be smaller, tighter controlled batches. We want them to have some collectability if you want to put them away. I think that's just sort of how we like doing it. You know, I want it to be kind of a nice, mix between the custom and the production world where, you know, if you get one, there's not 10,000 of them out there.
So how much, do your hands touch them? How does that work? Tell me the whole production model.
So right now we're not doing a ton with them other than the design side of it. Now, if we sell enough and get a little more funding going, and we're doing pretty good on that, you know, we've definitely made enough that the project will go.
On Kickstarter, you're like,
yeah,
you're like 400% funded or something. I mean, you're crazy funded, aren't you?
It's not that good, but I think it's it's like 250 or 60, which is which sounds better than it is. I mean, it's good. There's no danger that the project won't go.
Right.
Of course, there may be no danger that we'll make any money either. Which seems to be par for the course in knife making sometimes. I'm not sure anybody's really getting rich on this, but it's no, that part of it is going well. But yeah, we would like to do more. And if we can, you know, we want to get the shop back open because I just stored some stuff. You know, I didn't get rid of everything.
Okay.
We were just looking for a little better space that made more financial sense. And then also trying to get me a little more time to do this, the knife stuff, and not work quite so much because I do some security work now and a couple other things.
Okay, so I'm going to get a little nerdy on some of these knives. Tell me the difference between how do you make a distinction between the LPC and the DMF? I mean, to look at them, obviously they're different knives, but what's the purpose of the how does the purpose for the DMF differ to you?
Sorry. I mean, some of it may just be styling, right? I don't you know, I'm not a Dwayne Dwyer where I can totally geek out on everything that's in the steel on you, right? Like a metallurgy class.
Right.
That, you know, that cat knows a lot and it's fun to listen to him talk about it. And I'm trying to learn more as we go. But some of the, you know, you've got some standard tried and true steels that you can use. That's good. I'm not, you know, I think coming from the design side, sometimes it's more of an aesthetic thing. You know, I like kind of like Birch likes to do, like on the DMF, you know, that blade shape drops down in kind of a Dao or cheap, pretty sort of thing, other than there's some belly and some different stuff. But I just, you know, sometimes I just draw it up and like what works for me. You know, does it look good? Does it look good closed is another thing. That's something Jody taught us. He's like, you know, if we're going to pay this much money for a knife, it needs to look good closed too.
Yeah. I mean, this is a cool looking knife, I got to say. And I am trying to cut cool out of my vocabulary because it's, but I mean, cool is the right word for that. I mean, it is gorgeous. I love that.
Yeah, and we wanted to doll that one up just a little bit. We did the inserts. We did the pivot collar, which I thought was nice. The LPC is pretty much exactly like the LPC custom-wise. You know, it's still S30V steel, titanium frame and clip. The now the liner on this is steel as opposed to titanium, but we skeletonized the inside of it to lighten it up.
Okay.
So weight wise, you're still good there.
And the this new production version has bearings, right, in the pivot, which is a new thing.
There was not room for LPCs to run on bearings to start with. That everything was just packed in there. And that was a nice thing. Race, who is helping us, who owns Cutway, and that's who we're using, and that's who Mikey got us hooked up with, and they are out of Taiwan, and he's built stuff with them for years. Race is an engineer, so I really like that. So my lack of mechanical knowledge, you know, I can throw things out to Race, and he's like, yeah, that's a good idea. We can do that. Or I'll suggest something and he'll be like, no, you cannot do that. Or you can only move it this far before you're going to start having issues. But I love getting that feedback, you know, so that I know the knives are going to be as long as they can be. They're structurally sound. And I think that's fantastic.
I think that that's a very important relationship because as the designer, it's your job to kind of put your fancy down on paper, so to speak, and put your fantasy knife on paper. And then it's up to the engineer. I mean, that's their temperament, right? To tell you what works and what doesn't and to pare back and not be emotional and to take those two sides, put them together. You're going to get a great knife. You know, you got those.
Yeah. I think we generally have a pretty good idea of what works, but it's nice knowing it. Someone can actually do the science and the math behind it.
Yeah.
You're like, yes, this works.
So tell me about your design process. Are you pencil and paper? Are you CAD? Are you both? How does that work?
I'm pretty much pencil and a bar napkin. Yeah, that's how a lot of it starts. And then, you know, in the old days, I mean, too, you'd start cutting them out, you know, like you were making little paper dolls and just trace them out, cut them out, hold the center pivot or that area down with a pencil, start swinging it around, seeing if it hits or misses. Will it fit? And then change it. Now we're starting to learn how to draw in CAD. Mikey was helping me with that. And that's one of our goals. It would go a lot faster. But I can't, when we've tried, I can't draw with a mouse. Right. That I've got to get a hold of it.
And well, they you know, they have those pencil things.
Yeah. So they're trying to help me find the one that'll help us import that with the least amount of pain. But no, I'll draw it up. And then, you know, like in the old days, Jody would help me a lot. He'd cuss me a lot too. You know, he could not have been more helpful over the years because I brought him a ton of dumb ideas that he had to try to figure out how to make work. But, yeah, I'm more of a pencil and paper kind of guy for the moment, anyhow.
So the Dashi, cool little knife. Oh, there I go again. Dashi, awesome little knife. It's, I think you originally made it for air marshals. Is that right? As a tool?
Yeah, but that's not in any way endorsed by the air marshals. I want to be clear there. I mean, this thing barely, if even that, met their parameters of what they could fly with. They had some... They wouldn't let them carry a folding knife. It couldn't have a clip. There was a handful of BS they had to put up with. But so they gave me the list because a couple of our guys, two or three from our department, went to the air marshals, and I became buddies with some of their friends. And they were like, we want a Sniper Bladeworks knife, right? So it didn't fold. We could call it a rescue tool because it had some other function, which was the bottle opener.
Rescue you from a lame day flying.
It was complete crap, but it was close enough that they're like, we're going to do it. And so, yeah, we made a good handful of them for them, and we made a bunch. I say a bunch. I think we made like 50 or 45 for a show. And those were kind of fun because we finished them all different. We did some weird stuff, some weird geometric patterns, and you know, we left some of the patina on there from, or the coloration from when you temper them and bead blast part of it off there. You'll see a few running around these days.
Jim Skelton shows one that he got from that show in the video he does on the new LPC.
And I just got a box back that had girlfriends over to, she still has one, for these guys to look at. And she was kind of pissed. She's like, I want my Dashi back. Now, this one is a little bit bigger. I think this one's sexier. It's got a little bit of curvature on top where it was straight. I think the lines on this are a little better, and I like that it's a little bit bigger. I also, the old ones had holes in the handle. I think we had three just circles in there. Uh-huh. And by opening it up like this, I think it makes it easier to wrap. It just gives you some more options.
All right. Yeah, I really, I'm a sucker for little Kiridashis. I love the shape and I love the kind of the history of them in what I know. Is this one a chisel ground blade? Mm-hmm. Oh, perfect. And ground on the right side?
Yes.
Thank you. Because most of us are right-hand users, yeah, right?
Sorry, lefties.
Yeah, they'll have to do something about that. I am a neck knife wearer a lot of the time, so this one to me is definitely got my eye. But I am also a big knife lover. I love the smatchet design. I love barongs and all sorts of big kind of leaf shaped choppers. Tell me about the smatchet. How you decided to do this? It's kind of an audacious thing to decide to make. Tell me about how that came about.
I've always liked them. You know, Almar did one back in the day. Boker made one. It's been a minute. But those were really cool. I don't know if Buck did once upon a time. And then, you know, a handful of companies made them during World War II, right? Because they just got pressed into service because they needed them.
Right.
But I've always liked them. They're hard to find. You know, they only make, it seems like somebody only comes out with one about every 10 or 15 years. It's not everybody's cup of tea, then they stop making them. And, you know, but they're expensive because they, you know, they quit making them and then the price goes up on them. So I thought it would be fun to bring out a nice high end smatchet, you know, at a decent price that kind of had our Sniper Bladeworks styling on it. I just wanted to do it. And Adam liked it. And he's like, you know, I think we're both crazy, but let's do it. I'm like, awesome.
So for those who don't know or for those who aren't watching, describe what a smatch it is, what its historical role was, and then tell us what your take is and how you kind of updated it.
Well, you know, my understanding is, you know, that it was started off in World War II by Fairbairn or Fairbairn. It was a fighting knife. You know, it was just a great big nasty club and stab people with it. And I think a lot of times if anything is dagger shaped, that's kind of where your mind goes. But I started seeing where more people liked them for bushcraft purposes. And I just thought they were neat. I wanted to make some. I made one or two for my some SF guys that kind of thought that was cool. And I got a little bit of input from them. But as we started to see that they had some real bushcraft purpose, I'm like, well, hell, let's give this a shot. I made it a little bit smaller. We may have taken an inch out of it or something. And then I put our handle curvature on there. And that took me a little while to figure out how to make that work without an actual guard on there. I mean, it's different. So I played with it for a while. I bought some books. I'm kind of a book nerd on knife stuff. I like to get old knife books. And I'd look some stuff up on it. And I just kept drawing on it and coming back to it. And it took me, it took me a year or two of working on it, not working on it, till finally I hit on something that I'm like, I think this works.
Yeah, I think it works too. And something that I didn't think about it until you just mentioned it, but I could see how fitting your handle ergonomics onto a modern take on a smatch, it could be difficult. Look at that. That is beautiful. Because you're dealing with what is traditionally a totally symmetrical knife, you know, stem to stern. Yeah. And here you've kept the blade symmetry. And we'll talk about the grind in a second, but you've kept the blade symmetry. And then when you get to the hilt area, or, you know, the Ricasso area, you have to make, you know, that's where the real innovation comes in.
Yeah. It's sorry. Well, I put in a fake chew.
No,
it's not as good as Copenhagen, but it's getting me through.
Do what you got to do.
My gums and teeth feel a lot better. It was a pain. I was discouraged a few times in there, but I just kept playing with it, and it would progress some. And, you know, when I started getting frustrated with it, I'd put it away and then I'd come back to it. And then finally, when we kind of doubled up on that choil area, I'm like, mm-hmm. Okay, this will kind of take up that space and get it going.
When you say that, you mean added the thumb choil on top, kind of where the bottom?
You know, the bottom has kind of got like two choil areas and it steps down.
Okay.
Because when I was trying to do it with one, it looked kind of dumb. I mean, and it may look kind of dumb to some people right now. The guy that thought all these things were fugly is probably out there. It does look
fugly. So
I can't believe you're still around.
Yeah. Thank you for your valuable contribution, commenter. So in this case, you've sharpened or you've beveled the top of the blade about halfway. Is it sharpened?
No.
Okay.
You can if you want. I mean, we've taken some meat out of there. It's a pretty good false edge and you could sharpen that, but I didn't. I think if you sharpen that top edge, you would probably have some legality and chipping issues. You got to pay more attention if you start getting that top edge sharp as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you're doing bushcraft with it, for sure.
Yeah, if you want to do it, you can. And I think that's great. And we kind of set it up where we've made it easier for you to do that. But I don't want to send them out that way. I think that's kind of a personal choice. And it's probably safer and more practical, and you know, as it's coming right now.
Makes sense. Yeah, I mean, for the mall ninja in me wants the double edge, but if I were to get that knife, I would want to use it outside. It does look like a great sort of, I mean, for me, I don't do much outdoor stuff except in my own yard, but it looks like it would excel at the outdoor stuff, and having a big sharpened half edge on the top would be a total menace that I would fall on.
Yeah. I mean, I'll buy an extra one and sharpen it.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. Exactly.
Or maybe keep it in the house and be like, hope an intruder comes in. No, but we took it out and did some batoning with it, and it was really good for that. You know, I thought the weight was pretty good. The edge, you know, the edges have held up well. You know, I talked with Race 2 more about like edge geometry, because I'm not I'm not the greatest at sharpening. You don't really want me sharpening your knife. There's a few points in the process where you want the knife taken away from me. And that finish sharpening is one of them. You know, you want me designing it. You want me to get the handle there, getting all the sharp edges off. And, you know, I'm pretty good at fitting locks these days and some other stuff. But that final edge, why don't we go ahead and give it to one of the guys?
Man's got to know his limitations.
Yeah. Why don't we go ahead and take it over to Ambrosi here that does all the knives for the restaurant people.
So what? So you said S30V for the LPC. What are the other steels that are used in these knives? And then I want you to tell me about the Mamu. So on the Smatchet, that's got to be a different.
All the fixed blades are 1095.
Love 1095.
I do too. There's a few people that weren't thrilled. I mean, you're not ever going to totally please everybody on the steel thing. So we tried to come in with just some, and I'm not a big steel nerd. As long as it holds an edge and runs pretty well, I'm happy. You know, unless you were a butcher or cut cardboard all day, I don't know if you're really going to know the difference. Now, there are people that like to resharpen a lot, some of that. Those cats sort of fall into that category. But for the average person, I don't know if it makes a huge deal as long as you're putting a nice quality, tried and true, tested steel out there. So in that case, I was pretty happy with 1095. We coated it to help with rust resistance. S30B for the LPC. So I'm staring at one here. I apologize.
Hold it up. Let us see it.
And then I'm trying to, I know we ran with a stainless Damascus for the DMF. And I'll be honest, we got so busy with some of this. I knew that it got recommended from them. I don't have all the components in it for you. I'll find out more specifically. But I was just like, oh, I like this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of different in that the outside layers is clean, right? It's more like a laminate. You know, it's like kind of tan my.
Okay.
Like complicated.
Like a sandwich kind of, or a taco, whatever.
Yeah. Or just in layers. So the outside layer is clean, right? So you're only seeing the layers where you grind it away, which I think is a neat look. It's not too busy. And here's one of the other reasons I like, because they were saying we can stamp, they could do some stuff to the outside, but I'm like, that sounds dumb and not, I don't like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I almost was like, no, I don't want it. But they're like, no, it's a straight up, it's just not complicated. So that outside layer is clean. And I was like, let's just leave the outside layer clean. Because, you know, a lot of times when you go to logo, over Damascus, it gets real muddy. Kind of blurry. And since we were numbering these, we had the new logo. I mean, I think it sounded kind of pretentious, but they liked it, the signature.
No, that's cool.
I think it looks really nice. It makes me cringe a little when I see it because I feel like a tool. But I think it looks really good, and I think it's cool. And it's a cool feature.
Yeah.
I think once we're done with this, all that's getting pulled off.
Right. This is a special occasion. This is a special run. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's cool. Well,
I think it looks really nice.
So you're saying on the flats, you can't detect that it's a Damascus, but once you grind into it, as you can see up in the upper right hand corner, it reveals the different layers.
Right. You only start seeing the different layers when you grind it. So you'll see it there, you'll see it out at the tip. We'll have them polish up the spine.
Oh, yeah. Now, yeah, you can see that.
This is the proto, so it's rough. So these will get cleaned up. But then, like, the spine, you can see the core in there.
Yeah, we can see the... But
then we'll shine that up more. And then the same out here on these swedges at the tip. You'll see more of that. And you might be able to see a little bit in there with the thumb groove.
Yeah, that's really...
I thought it was a nice touch without being too busy. And coming in stainless, you're going to have fewer maintenance issues.
Oh, yeah. I'm going back to... I agree with you. I think it is a really nice touch on... it's a simple thing. On certain knives, you have a finish going this way and a finish going, you know, vertical and horizontal satin or different, you know, the bevels are rubbed and the... and the flats or stonewash, whatever it is. I like that difference in the grind and to see the different layers of the San Mayas.
Yeah. And now I don't, somebody may jump. This may not technically be San Maya, but it's
okay.
That,
all right.
But it's that theme. I mean, I use the term first, but it's that kind of process is what I'm understanding. And I'll try to be coached up on that a little more. I just got all geeked out on how much I liked it. So I have not got back to them on some of the particulars, but I'm really digging it.
So tell me about the 2020 Reload marketing and like and how you have gotten all of this back out, gotten yourself back out there. It's been, just from my perspective, it's been a very strong showing. It's like you guys are back and you've got these five awesome models. And are they all legacy models? Are these all models you've done before?
Yeah, we know, with the exception of, well, we haven't done the
Smatchet.
I guess we have done the Smatchet. I've done a couple customs and a couple protos of that. The, you know, and the Dashy is slightly different, but we've done the Dashy before. So yeah, they're all models we've done. You know, the DMF we've done for a while. That was that one was pretty well received.
What was your strategy to come back out, your marketing strategy, et cetera?
I mean, a lot of that fell to Adam. You know, I told him I can help design and help build and prototype and get you some strong examples. But, I, you know, this is where I need help. I mean, I know we need to do social media. What we're supposed to do on there, I'm not sure. Right? You know, pictures of us drinking and cooking food in the shop, maybe good, maybe not. I don't know. But so he went out and found a couple guys that I refer to as our intel squirrels a lot. And yeah, and before we're done, I'm sure I'll probably have a note of stuff that I'm supposed to tell you from the intel squirrels. Them happy. But these guys, so one of them was more business oriented and computery, computer nerdy. And the other one is more graphic. I do work for big shoe companies and car companies and artsy nerdy. And they came on board. I say nerdy. They're actually pretty cool. They probably whip my old ass one these days. they're real good dudes. So they, you know, I linked up with them and we made the Craft. I don't know if you saw the Craft movie that we did at the very start of the Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
Like just shy of 6 minutes, but it kind of tells our story a little bit and what we're doing. And we went out and filmed that with Mikey, who's been helping us with this. So, you know, we kind of let them run with some of that. And that I had to sort of take a step back there because they occasionally do some stuff that I don't know. It just seems weird to me, right? But, you know, we empowered them to do this and they've really done a good job. I think they've picked up on what the brand is through, you know, us coaching them some and just being around us. And they came out, you know, they came up with this influencer program, which I think was really cool because there's some advertising limitations because of them being knives where people may not dig on that. So they're like, why don't we get some of these out to influencers? So we went out and kind of scoured the internet of people that we liked and watched and kind of dug what they were doing. And that's how we came up with this list. And so the influencer thing has gone out and that's been really good. I mean, I always worry a little bit when stuff goes out. I hope it's going to work, you know, especially if I haven't had a chance to check all of it or make all of it. I think all this has been exercise and giving up some control. And trusting people to do their jobs, asking for some help and then accepting it, getting out of your own way.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds like a self-help book there, man. The last three sentences.
Yeah. That, you know, and if I add in, don't drink too much, it'd be perfect. Well, be a very happy person.
It can be very hard to, it can be very hard to give up any control of a creative venture that comes from your heart. You know, it's not something you're assigned to do for work or something like that. It's something that came from you. And then suddenly you're at a point where, you know, if you want that thing to survive, you have to give up some control because other people need to help you.
No, and it is, and it's good. I mean, I think it's been a good learning experience, and I think it's good for the company. You know, and so far, all these people have really done a good job. You know, Race has done a great job delivering the knives, and the reviews of them have been very positive. There's a few things in there that we're going to tweak, but there weren't quality issues. There were probably things I missed, or like we're going to soften some of the edges on the Mamu. Down the spine, they're just a little sharp. You know, especially if you're going to use it repeatedly, you'd like those to have a little chamfer on them or be tumbled a little harder. But no, they've done a good job. Our intel squirrels have done a great job in helping push this out, because I wouldn't have pushed it that hard. It once again, I get a little self-conscious. I'm like, I'm not sure people want to see that much of me or my knives or any of this. And so that's good that they are like, just go away for a weekend, Lance, and let us run this.
Man, I need a little department like that. Actually, I do. His name is Jim. My producer and partner in the Knife Junkie is a bit of an online genius kind of guy. And man, I'm lucky because it's the same thing. Like I could figure it out, you know, with my feet to the fire, I could figure out. But I mean, Each social media platform has a different language and a different way to be on it and all that. And I just don't want to be on them for that long, you know, to figure it out. So to have other people around you giving you hints and tips, like Jim whispering in my ear and your info squirrels or your intel squirrels, man, that's very valuable, because that's where it's all happening with knives. It's such a visual thing. Your attachment is primarily visual and initially visual. I don't have a knife store, you know, 100 miles around me that I can go to check stuff out and see how they feel. If I look at a Sniper Blade Works in a picture, I can tell that's going to feel good in hand, you know? And then,
yeah, I think so. Not everybody gets it, but I think a lot of people do. I mean, that's why I think too, we've done so well at shows, is because people can actually get them, feel them. Mm. And if you're not picking up on it, you get it once you hold it. So we were really trying to, you know, get that message out and do good photography. And, you know, because this is a case where they're going to eat with their eyes, because they can't hold the knife.
Right.
We want to make sure that we've showed them some different views about grips and talked about the ergonomics, because that's what's probably most important to me. You know, I think that's the thing that I've worked the hardest on. And, you know, so we want to make sure that message gets out. And I think they've done a good job of doing that.
Again, like I said before, it's a great thing that you already have fans in a way. And this reload is going to be, I think it's going to be big. I think there's a real appetite for the kind of knives you make. And I'm thrilled to see them back. And I think they're going to go like hotcakes. Because I could see where they could fit in my collection, you know, all of these kind of knives, these modern, I'll say overbuilt, these modern, robust folders that flex into tactical, flex into tool, flex into EDC. And so where do you want to see this going? I know you said you want this to be boutique-y, but how do you see the company growing in the coming, you know, market?
You know, in a perfect world, I would like to, you know, if this thing is successful enough, we'd like to get the shop back up and running again. And we'll be able to do that either way, but it's easier if this thing runs well. But I'd like to, you know, still make a few customs, prototype some stuff, because I still enjoy building things. But, you know, I'd like to get to a point where, you know, maybe I get to make customs. I don't have to make customs. But still get a few of those out for people and for shows. We'd like to get back to shows. You know, I'd like to just hit it in a more regular fashion. This Kickstarter thing was kind of fun, kind of not. It's interesting, but it's not a perfect format. You know, I'd like to get back to just where you can call us up and, order what you want, you know, get stuff out to dealers. That's one of our goals once this thing is over. So we'll see how that goes. And then just doing new knives. I mean, there's a good part of the reason I think we went production, or couple, if we got a second.
Yeah.
I wanted to make knives that were less expensive. Like, I only own one of my own knives. I don't even have it at the moment. I had to send it to somebody. So I have no customs of my own. you know, and a lot of my buddies couldn't afford them either. right? You know, they're cops, they're firemen, they're military cats, unless I'm just selling them to them super cheap, which I do sometimes, but then I'm not, I'm losing money.
Yeah.
We wanted to get more knives into more people's hands. So that was one of the reasons. Because our handle design is so unique, but it transfers over. You get 100% of that value, whether it's a custom or a production knife. The ergonomics are exactly the same. And in this case, the components are exactly the same. And in some instances, better, right? Like DMFs and LPCs didn't run on bearings prior to this.
Right.
And I don't really want to take the time to machine them all in because I'm not that great of a machinist. I can do it, but it's going to take a while. So I love that I can now offer that on every knife at a much cheaper price. You know, we also added in, we've got a little combination over travel bar, and the knife also locks up on that, which is cool. So you're not just locking up against the titanium kind of like you did a few years back. So that can be replaced. We're talking about, you know, so like those cats.
Wait. I'm sorry. Explain. Are you talking about the, you have a lock bar insert of steel that goes steel against steel at the tent. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. But that also, it's a combination that also keeps you from opening up too far and taking the spring out of your lock bar.
Gotcha. It's got a little tab on the inside that prevents it from, okay.
You get a little pocket milled out in there for it to go into.
Sweet.
That would be a giant pain to do. By hand,
yeah.
Like if you were Dan over at DSK or Birch or somebody, that, yeah, they'd probably do it in their sleep, but I cannot. So I think that's a great feature that you're getting at a better price. So I that really made me happy, and I just like seeing my designs get made. You know, I've got designs I'll probably never get to, but I've got a better shot at getting to them now that we can turn out some knives faster.
And it'll be, it will feel good in a different way to get your designs in the hands of people that they're intended for. I'm sure most of the knives you've produced have ended up in the hands of collectors and who baby them. It'll be great for your designs to be made and to be in the hands and affordable enough to be in the hands of the people that you originally designed them to be used.
And faster, you know, it's like we did some stuff for these SF guys, but if they, and some of them were fixed blades, so that made it easier, but it still took a while to get them 20 knives. You know, if you came in and wanted 20 folders, they'd be ungodly expensive and take forever. Yeah. You know, right now, I mean, I could be like, I'll pull them off the shelf and, you know, maybe I can anodize them some custom color for you or take them out to the laser engraver. You know, so we can still do some stuff to give them some custom touches, but they'll just get done quicker. Faster, the parts are tighter, tolerances are tighter. I just that excites me.
So yeah, I can see that. I mean, and each one will be more like the other. Each one, they'll be so uniform. There's something kind of pleasing about that too. So how can people get these knives from the 2020 Reload? Where should they go? When are they available? Are they available now?
They're available now. You can go to Kickstarter. If you go to Kickstarter and just type in, if you type in Sniper, our thing is the first thing that comes up. But if you type in Sniper Blade Works, if you go to our website right now, I don't think it does. We're in the process of redoing it, but for the moment, there's a tab that'll just take
you
straight to
your website basically takes you there, which is great.
Yeah. I think it shows you the video, and there is an affiliate program. If someone's interested in that, they can contact my brother, who's Nick at SniperBladeWorks.com. I'm Lance at SniperBladeWorks.com. Everybody, it's just your first name at SniperBladeWorks.com. So if you need to get a hold of Adam for some reason, that's how you get a hold of him. But you will get, and I don't think it's 10% off. I think they'll actually give you 10% cash. Like if you refer people there, if they go through and there's a dashboard, you got to sign up for it. But if you sign up for that, they'll keep track of that. So you can actually get money back to do whatever you want with. And if you buy it, I think they'll actually do it on your first purchase. So if you go through that affiliate program, you can just take 10% off whatever you're buying. My understanding.
That's awesome. Go to the website and check it out. Go to the Kickstarter, check it out, or call or email Nick at SniperBladeWorks.com.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, Lance, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really excited to have heard about this 2020 Reload, and just to see your knives back out there in the flow is so cool, because I always thought they were so cool.
I appreciate that. I hope there's people still listening and I haven't bored them to death.
And now it actually means I can get one in my hands, you know, and that's the most exciting thing. And going into this, you know, I had my own idea. Of course, I want the smatch it because it's so dramatic. But coming into this, I wanted the LPC, but going out of it, I want the DMF. Not that I don't want them all, but I think my first would be that DMF. What a beautiful knife, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I thought that one turned out well. So yeah. I'm pleased.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks again for coming on the Knife Junkie podcast. Lance Abernathy of Sniper Bladeworks. It's been a pleasure, sir.
Thanks so much for having me. Y'all be safe.
Visit the Knife Junkie at thenifejunkie.com to catch all of our podcast episodes, videos, photos, and more.
All right, Bob, back on the Knife Junkie podcast. A great interview with Lance there of Sniper Blade Works, and another one of these Kickstarter campaigns, Bob, that we have started talking about. But one difference here that I heard is that it's not a wannabe knife maker that's starting a campaign. This is a knife maker already.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's the thing that's the difference that I noticed right away too, and how he can really benefit from that format, already having a reputation, a head of steam built up. I mean, we've seen a lot of new and up and comer knife makers become successful through Kickstarter, and rightly so, you know, much deserved. But it's also cool. It's also interesting to see how you can use that tool even as a veteran knife maker. Right. And, you know, like I was kind of gushing before, when the LPC came out, you know, 10 years ago or sort of a little less than 10 years ago, I was seeing it everywhere and wanting it so bad and knowing that it was so out of reach, especially then, but even now, you know, a custom LPC, and just to see that it's now, you know, he's doing what other makers, other designers have been doing. He's having someone else who manufactures fantastic knives do it for him and get that design out there. Right. And then a lot of hands. Also, I like that it's five models and 555 of each produced.
Right. Very cool. I like the number five too. It's one of my favorite numbers. So yeah, it's got a nice ring to it. Yeah. All right. Still, time for you to check out that Kickstarter. Use your favorite search engine and do Sniper Blade Works Kickstarter in the search, and it'll come up. And just an awesome Kickstarter page. I showed a little bit of the video there that he was talking about. Fantastic video. Love seeing some of the behind-the-scenes shots of the shop and making the knives, those kind of things. So, yeah. Favorite search engine, Sniper Blade Works Kickstarter, and you'll find that page.
And not for nothing, Jim, sorry to interrupt you, but that film is beautifully produced that his cohort made. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Don't forget to join us this Wednesday for the Midweek Supplemental Podcast, and this Thursday for Thursday Night Knives. It's the live video show where you have a chance to come on and talk to Bob and actually show off some of your knives for the whole world to see and our fellow knife junkies to see. So hopefully you can join us this Wednesday and Thursday for live Thursday Night Knives. So for the knife junkie himself, Mr. Bob DeMarco, I'm the knife newbie over here, Jim Person, thanking you for joining us on episode number 156 of the Knife Junkie Podcast. All right, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, thenifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at thenifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on thenifejunkie.com/Instagram, and join our Facebook group at thenifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to Bob@thenifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487, and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.